Okay, welcome to FrostCon. I'm Franz Blätz. The talk today is about NixOS and the package manager Nix, a novel approach to both package management and configuration management. First, a few words about myself. I thought the easiest way would be to present my GitHub page. So I'm very active in the Munich Chaos Commuter Club. I'm also running the Freifunk Munich infrastructure with NixOS, of course. And I'm working for Mayflower. It's a small web shop based in Munich, where we are already using Nix in production. And that's why I'm here, to spread the message. Also, I'm privately using Nix OS for about 2.5 years. And since about half a year, I'm contributor to Nix OS, so I have commit access, and I'm a member of the project. So I'm kind of qualified to speak here. So, let's start. The first thing I want to talk about today is package management. And when you think about package management, what are the typical features of a package manager? So, the basic thing a package manager does is it codifies the package building process. So, you have a bunch of code that you can run, and that will guarantee that your package gets built somehow. So that you have an output, runnable binary, a script, or a library that you can use in your system. The other thing is it creates a package that can be distributed across multiple systems and installed and uninstalled. It manages the whole package lifecycle, so it also takes care of upgrades, downgrades, installed, uninstalls, and it maintains either a local package repo where you know which packages are available for install and which packages are installed, or you can maintain a whole package repo where you can fetch packages from a remote destination. Also, a package manager typically ensures that the package integrity, so it's guarded by a cryptographic hash sum, and it guarantees the authenticity of the package. That means that you can be sure that the package comes from a trusted source, like the Debian repos. And you can be sure that Debian should be trusted. The other thing is version and dependency management. So a package manager usually has a concept of a version of a package that you can use to pin functionality or a specific compatibility version to a package, and it also takes care of dependencies. So if one package depends on another package, for example, a library, this library has also to be installed. So when we look at typical package managers today, they follow a classic procedural approach. So you get the package instructions and the metadata, so the instructions how to build the package, and some metadata around it, like what version, where's the homepage of the project, what is the description of the package, and other things. This is one of the inputs. The other input is the environment you build the package in. This is typically a standard Unix file system where you have something like headers, libraries, or other files that are necessary for the build. With these both inputs, you invoke the build system that builds the package for you. Build systems typically are some things like auto tools or make files or CMake or language specific builders like npm or gem or pip or setup tools for Python. You invoke that, and this package building process results in an output that is then placed in the file system. When it's placed in the file system, you can access it or via standard locations that are well-defined. Now, the problem here is that the end state of your package build process and your install process results in a new state of your whole file system that is then used again to build other software. So the problem here is that you don't know the state of your file system, and you can't be sure what's installed or what's not installed if you rely on the file system state you're currently in. So that's a big problem, because the build results, the end results, depend on the inherited state of the build environment you're in, and the package install itself modifies the state, which sounds kind of dirty. So this is the moment where where you have typical what the fuck moments, like you compile or run a package on one machine, but it doesn't work on the other machine, and you don't know why. Another typical fail is you install new packages, but the package manager failed somehow. For example, a file that's to be installed already exists on the system. The package manager fails, and the result is that the system is in an undefined state where you don't know what kind of files of the package are installed and what are not installed. And then maybe it is broken, maybe it works, but you can't be sure because most package managers don't have a rollback feature. The other thing is, if you update libraries, on big updates tend to change the application binary interface, or ABI, and then all dependent packages are broken. So for example, if you compile a new version of OpenSSL, and the new version of OpenSSL has another application binary interface, you can't use pre-compiled programs that depend on the old ABI version. Another thing is, if you have a new user, a new Linux or Unix user, and he just wants to monkey patch some file in a package, for example, some Python script that is installed, just modifies it, and on package upgrades, it gets overwritten. So it's not really desired. So what I told before is we're doing purely functional stuff. But what does purely functional mean? It comes from functional programming, where the concept is that you have functions that always evaluate to the same result with the same inputs. That means all inputs of a function that could change the output are always defined. You don't have some kind of global state or global variables like in C, for example, that you don't know about, that you can't reason about, that change the output. Another property is that the evaluation of the result itself does not cause any side effect. That means if you run the function, it doesn't change any state outside of the function. So it doesn't inherit state from the environment, and it also doesn't change state outside the environment of the whole function. That's purely functional. That is purely functional code. So if you apply this to the package build process, you have a stateless solution. That means you don't place your build outputs in the standard Unix file system, but you place it in a well-defined prefix. Here it's called $prefix. It's just a variable that could change, but it's not in /usr. It's somewhere else. So you only depend on the package instructions and metadata, and these package instructions and the metadata. So in this case, the metadata also contains all dependencies, really all dependencies that are needed. They define the output in the new prefix directory. So the nice properties about this is that it's reproducible. All dependencies are well-defined. The complete build environment is well-defined. The whole operation is atomic, because you don't modify state in your running file system, but you have a new prefix where you install everything, and it's isolated from the other environment, for your regular system environment. Also, it's conflict-free, because, for example, if you install two versions of a library, both libraries tend to have the same files and the same locations, and you get a conflict, because those two packages share the same files that are possibly different. And it's immutable because you shouldn't change the prefix, because the prefix is well defined by the build inputs. So you shouldn't change it, and thus it's immutable. So this is where Nix comes into play. Nix is a purely functional package manager. So what is Nix? It started all with the PhD thesis of Elko Dijkstra. It's a Dutch guy. They had a cool idea. The PhD thesis is called the purely functional deployment model. And indeed, the PhD thesis tries to create a new approach how to deploy software reproducible in a functional manner. So if you want to read it, it's actually a nice read. So Nix enforces that the build results only depend on the declared inputs. It's implemented in C++, and it uses a purely functional language to describe both the package builds and the dependencies. So you have another kind of DSL, domain-specific language, that it's specifically tailored for package building, for package management. The language is lazily evaluated. That means expressions are only evaluated when they are needed. And it's dynamically typed like regular script language. So you don't have to define types for every variable you use. It's the type is always inferred. So what I forgot to mention, if something is unclear, please yell at me and tell me that you didn't understand something. It's very important that you understand most of the things I say. If you have any further questions, please ask them after the talk. Thanks. Okay, so the key features of Nix. It has an immutable package store. So everything you install with Nix is immutable. It's read-only. You can't modify it. It features atomic upgrades and rollbacks for every operation it performs. It ensures that the build environment you are building packages in is isolated from the rest of your system. It also features shell environments where you can go into a new environment where only specific packages are available, like, for example, for development environments. It runs on standard POSIX systems that includes Linux, BSDs, and even OS X. It has support for multiple versions of the same package. It also supports multi-user package management. That means if you have a standard Unix system, every user on the system can install packages, and it's not a security risk. Those packages the user installs are only available for the user. And it has a classic source binary model. You can choose to build everything from source, but also binary caches are available from Nixos, or you can set up your own binary caches if you like. So Nix itself is such a package manager. What you need is packages, package descriptions, how to build packages. That's Nix PKGs. That's the standard package set for Nix. It's available as a GitHub repository. As I've said, the Nix language is a general purpose programming language. You can do basically everything with it if you want. And thus, it's maintained on Git, where you can do pull requests and stuff, just like every other open source project. It features lots of abstractions, because Nix itself is very, very stupid. It does one thing, and one thing very well, that is building packages and managing packages. So in this Nix PKGs repo, you have lots of abstractions for, like, fetching sources from Git, from Mercurial, tarballs over FTP, over HTTP, whatever, even from weird version control systems like Bazaar or Docs or something like that. It features a standard build environment that you can use as an abstraction to the standard Nix concept of a package build, where you get a lot of things for free. For example, the standard build environment detects if the package is using GNU Auto Tools, CMake, if it's a Python package, if it's a Ruby package, and acts accordingly. If it doesn't detect something, you can always override every aspect of the package build if desired. But the cool thing is that standard software packaging is very easy. It's basically only a few steps that you need to provide, like the package name, like the version, like the source, and you're done. Right now, we have over 10,000 packages available. This includes, for example, Haskell packages, where we import the whole package. So every Haskell package available in the standard package repo is available on NixOS. It doesn't work yet for Python and Ruby. You have to do it manually right now, but it's also planned to import every every package from every language-specific software repository that is out there. And also, this package set can be used on other Unix systems and Darwin. So for example, you can use Nix on OS X instead of Homebrew. And it's actually better than Homebrew, of course. So how, let's dig a little bit deeper. How is purity achieved in NixOS? What you see here is the dollar prefix I mentioned about. In this thing, I take, for example, the OpenSSH package. OpenSSH will get a prefix that it's located in /nix/store. That part is kind of hard-coded. And after that comes a hash, the name of the package, and the version. So the interesting thing about this is the hash. The hash is computed over all dependencies that are that OpenSSH that are declared for OpenSSH and the package build of OpenSSH itself. So for example, if I change one character in the package build of OpenSSH, this hash will change. If I change the package build process of a package that that OpenSSH depends on, this hash will change. And OpenSSH will get rebuilt. So this is basically the output of a pure function. It only depends on the input we give them without any side effects. And the hash, if the inputs are the same, the hash won't change. How does Nix achieve that? Like I said, it's a function language, so you don't have like Python scripting in there where you can import some modules that do crazy stuff in the file system. No, it's a functional language. You can't do input, output. No way. You don't have side effects. The other thing is the package builds are running in a change root environment. There is no networking available. Shebangs, so the lines, the first line in a shell script that denotes the interpreter are patched. So if you have a shell script that has a shebang of bin bash, it will get rewritten to Nix store hash bash and so on. The Nix store is mounted read only, so you can't modify it. And tooling has to be patched. For example, tools like compiler or the linker don't know about this prefixing stuff. They needed patching to support that. This is the magic that is happening behind the scenes. But, yeah, sure.
You mentioned no networking, but you specify like the URLs for the package to be downloaded. Is that where you're getting
that? That's the next slide. Of course, there has to be an exception. This is called fixed output derivation. This is a special kind of package. In Nix, it's called derivation because it has to be functional, it has to be complicated. So there's a fetchUL function that fetches a URL, and the output of this function is a store path where the URL, the file in the URL, is saved. So you think about, but how can this purely can this be purely functional? So fixed output derivation means in Nix that you have that you provide a hash of the output because you know it beforehand. So you have to download the OpenBSD binary or the OpenBSD tarball, source tarball, before, compute a hash of it, and then provide it. This way, Nix knows before downloading the package what the output path will be. So this is the way to specify it. If the hash doesn't match, you have another version of the tarball, and it doesn't work. This is an exception of this pure functional code, but you guard it with a cryptographic hash. So we have kind of fetch UL stuff. We also have abstractions for like fetch from GitHub, fetch from Git, fetch from Bitbucket, fetch from GitLab, everything. Just like fetch from GitHub takes the owner, the repo, and the revision. Of course, you can also provide tags, Git tags in there, or branches if you like. And it just works like that. So as I said, for impure derivations, we know the output and that's why we can hash it before, and then we know we get the same output again. So this is a graph of the dependencies of OpenSSH. This is actually generated by Nix tools. You can just get an graph with POT output, and you can render this. If you look at the OpenSSH closure means all the packages that are all the runtime dependencies that are needed to run OpenSSH. You get this. These are all the packages in the Nix store that are needed for OpenSSH with the hashes. If you take a look at the store path itself, for example, OpenSSH, you have your standard prefix in there, like it would be in /usr. You have a bin directory, and you have an etc directory, you have a lib directory, and you have a share directory with all, in this case, man pages. So sorry, I have to scroll up. And these are all the man pages, for example. So you think, what the fuck? How can this work? So for standard executable ELF binaries, the linker has been changed, or the linking process has been changed to fixed paths where to find the libraries. So in the normal case, the output of LDD would just say, for example, libz.so.1, and the linker will try to find the libz.so.1 in well-known library paths. In this case, we just don't care about it. We don't want to use the search feature. We just pin it to one specific version that is in the Nix store. The same applies to other programs like IOTOP. IOTOP is a Python executable. It's a Python script, of course, that is executable. NixOS or Nix, the package manager, generates wrapper scripts automatically for it. So for example, IOTOP needs some Python packages. So the Python path is set accordingly so that the packages that are needed are available. For example, it needs Python encurses. And other binaries are needed, so the path will be extended. That's the magic behind it. So let's take a real-world example. How is OpenSSH packaged in NixOS? The whole code for OpenSSH looks like this. So I'm quickly going over what the few components are about in the package build, but it is by no means how to write Nix code. But as you can see, it's kind of you kind of get the grasp of it how it should work. So the first line is actually a function definition, a definition of an anonymous function. That's the colon operator here. It takes these dependencies as an input. So in there, there's the standard environment, there's the fetch all function, there's stuff like zlib, OpenSSL, libedit, package config, and pam. And these are available later in the code. Then we make a derivation. In this case, we make a special derivation. It's the wrapper function of a derivation from the standard environment. So this is what I'm talking about, what I was talking about. That's the magic that's coming from the standard environment that automatically detects how to build packages. Then you specify the name and the version of the package. That's easy. The source is the standard field for where to find the source. You have seen that code before. Then the build inputs are the actual packages that will be available when this derivation is built. So this is the list of packages that is available. As you can see, it is not the same list that is on the top, because on the top are just packages that are available in the scope of the Nix expression building the package. So you have to manually say this has to be in the build environment. And then you have other stuff like You can change the configuration flags if you use GNU Auto Tools. In this case, something's overwritten. And if PAM is not available, then it just gets built without PAM. Other stuff like the install targets. This is basically a standard Auto Tools workflow to install packages is configure, make install. But in the case of OpenSSH, you don't want to use make install because make install also generates SSH host keys. And you don't want to pre-generate host keys that you then distribute. So OpenSSH has a special target, install no keys, which you have to specify because Nix doesn't know about this extra target that's specific to OpenSSH. And then there's the meta section where all other stuff, for example, where to find the homepage, what license this package is available under, what platforms, and what are the maintainers of it. So this is basically what it looks about, what it looks like, and I think it's kind of easily understandable what it's all about, yeah? Sorry, libssl?
Well, I'm wondering how do you make clear that PAM is optional and the rest of the package is not.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. So the question is, how do you specify or how do you specify that PAM is optional, but the other inputs, the other dependencies are not? So basically, every dependency on the top. Sorry, I'm going back to the slide without those things. All the packages on top are packages that will be available in the scope of the build, but all those packages could be null. So it could be that these packages are overwritten, that they are not available. And in that case, we can check if they are null, and then we can do something about it. So for example, it could be that libedit is not available, but that's not a problem. Because OpenSSH in that case also works without libedit. But because we said here that we want to build it has to be available because if it's not available, the configure script will fail. So you will get a fail. And you have to encode the dependencies in a way that the package build will fail if you want them to be available in the build.
How do you guarantee that?
What?
How do you guarantee that this package is available?
Libedit?
Yes.
Actually, Nix won't, but the package build will, because the configure script is configured to use libedit, but when it's not available, it will fail. So in that case, it's okay to not have libedit because you have encoded that you want to have libedit, but in the package build. It's a bit of a hack, I agree. The thing is, I shortened the definition a little bit because there are some custom patches in the original derivation where you have patches for GSS API or something and other stuff that was just too confusing for this example. So, yeah, you also can add assertions. So the Nix will fail at evaluation time if an argument has a special value. Okay. Sure.
Can you specify the versions of the
dependencies? So I could specify the versions, but in this case, I'm referring to other code. So the question was, can I specify specific versions? So in that case, I'm referring to other derivations that are just written like this. So for example, the zlib package is just written like this and has a hard-coded version there. one version of this package will be available in the standard case. So if you increase the version of Zlib, OpenSSH will get rebuilt with that version. And it's just another file where this is defined. But you can override stuff. Unfortunately, I don't have slides for that, but you could say, I take for example, the definition of OpenSSH, but I change the source attribute and the version attribute. And then the same other instructions will apply, but you just change the version. And it's possible. And both versions of that package can live in the same store on the same system. If you depend on a specific version, that's possible. For example, for OpenSSL, we do have more versions available. For example, we have the version 101 and 102. So actually, I could write OpenSSL _1_0_1 and get the 101 version. And I can specify OpenSSL 102 to get the other version. But it depends on the version that are available in the Nix Pikachu's repo, of course. It depends on the version that is available in the Nix Pikachu's repo. So in the GitHub repo, where all the packages in the standard package set. But of course, you can override everything if you want. That's no problem. Actually, quite a few people do that. They have a local configuration where they just override some versions and just use them. And continue to use the standard package set. That's no problem. Because it's just regular, it's just code. You can override attributes there. This here is just an attribute set. It's called in Nix. It's just a key value pair where you just can change the values of the keys. Yeah. Sorry? Yes, the dependencies will get installed automatically. If you install OpenSSH, all runtime dependencies, these are the build time dependencies, all runtime dependencies that are inferred after the build will be also installed. But these won't be available on the system. So for example, the OpenSSL package also provides the library, but also provides the OpenSSL binary, which you can call and do stuff like create SCA, create some certificates or stuff. But if you install OpenSSH on your system, the OpenSSL utility won't be available because it will only be available for OpenSSH, but not for you. If you want to have it in your system, you have to specify it, that you want OpenSSL in your system path, basically. Sorry? If it's not available?
Yeah.
I did not get it.
Yeah. If it's not available, then it will be installed.
Yes, it will be installed, it will be downloaded. So the question was, if libedit is not available, it will be installed.
Yeah, okay.
It will be downloaded and put into the Nix store.
Okay.
And it will be available, in this case, only for OpenSSH, because OpenSSH depended on it, of course. If you have other packages depending on it, this version would, of course, be used by the other packages also. Yeah?
I think the misunderstanding was the hammer, like that in this example, there is no difference between PAM and libedit except for checking for it.
Yes.
So why would PAM not be automatically installed, but libedit would be? I mean, how is it possible that PAM is not installed, but libedit always is?
PAM would, the question is, why would libedit be installed, but PAM wouldn't? PAM will also be installed if it is available in the Nix packages repo. So if OpenSSH is built with PAM, it will be available, or it will be a dependency of OpenSSH, and it will be downloaded and installed in the store, of course. But if it's not available at evaluation time, then it won't be installed because OpenSSH, the code in OpenSSH that depends on PAM won't be built. So it won't be needed. That's the flag here for a configure. It triggers.
About
Yeah, but the package index is basically just a Git repo. So the cool thing about it is you can also depend on a specific commit. You can pin your whole system on a specific commit of the repo. That's also the cool stuff. You don't have things like repos where specific versions are installed. You just have the definitions in the repo that you can inspect basically with the package manager, because it evaluates all the code that results in the package set. Let's continue. Whoa. That discussion was a bit too much. Nix also has the concept of profiles and environments, like I told before. So all the blue arrows are symlinks, and the red arrow is basically only inherited by the path. So basically the path says the Nix profile should be in the path, but the path, the Nix profile in your home directory is linked to a profile that is versioned, so you can roll back to an old profile. And in this profile, there's an environment where all your tools are installed. For example, the version 42 of the default environment has Subversion in it, but the version 43 of the default environment has also Firefox in it. So I'll speed it up a little bit. You have, with this concept, you have something like Nix Shell. Nix Shell is just like virtualenv or Bundler or RVM, but for all packages. It works just the same with npm, carbal, pip, gem, go, with your Rust packages, with NuGet for mono packages or .NET, and even with Bower for your front-end dependencies. You just use Nix Shell, and these packages will be available in your environment. So for example, I have in my standard environment, I don't have Python installed. Python says no command found. I'll invoke Nix Shell with .p for package that will be available. I say Python, I will be dropped into a new Nix Shell where Python will be available. The same works for Python modules. So I'll try to import the requests module that is not available in Python 2 by default. So it says no module named requests is available. I'll exit the Nix Shell. I'll start a new Nix Shell with Python and the requests Python package available. And if I do import requests, it doesn't fail because now it's available. In the background, the same magic is happening. The Python path is patched with the requests prefix and the request module is available. You can also, this was the imperative way, you can also define a configuration file to specify a Nix Shell environment. So in this example, I'm doing the same, just in a file that you can drop in the root of your project, and you can just invoke Nix Shell and it will be available. There's also a special flag --pure where it removes all other dependencies. So for example, if I have like Ruby available on the outside, if I go into a pure Nix Shell, only the defined dependencies will be available, but Ruby, for example, that is available outside, won't be available. Yes?
So let's say a request depends on SSL dev or something like that, because I've
seen it does, that. Yeah.
Right, so what happens in that case? All of that get installed during the Nix Shell invocation? Or?
Yes, all will get installed, so that the requests module will work. Yes, exactly. Just the same like virtualenv for Python, basically.
Right.
But for really for all packages that are available in the Nix package set.
I'm not sure if my next question would be an intelligent one, but could this be an alternative to containers just for quick hacks and checks and things like that? I don't know.
So can it be done for quick checks and hacks? Yeah, sure. For example, if I have a project that's using npm or something, I'll just drop in a Nix shell where npm and some default like packages like grunt or something or bower are available, and I just can do the hacking. And if I go out, they're not available anymore. But mind you, they are still in the Nix store, so it takes up space. But Nix has a garbage collect feature to delete store paths that are not referenced anymore. This is so the question was, what about port forwarding? This is just a package management feature. So it's just about packages. But port forwarding is the right is the right keyword. Now let's get the configuration management. So I won't get into details about configuration management, but traditional configuration management is just shell scripting. It's just an imperative declaration of what will be done one after another. For example, Chef is like that, and Ansible is also basically glorified with shell script of dependencies. So other systems, traditional systems like Puppet, say they are declarative. And indeed, they are declarative. So you declare that a package like OpenSSL has to be installed. Or you declare a user named Aris with a specific UID in the home directory has to be present. And Puppet will ensure that these are present. But the problem is, it only mutates the state that is already available on your target machine. So that means the undeclared aspects of your whole system. For example, if you deploy this manifest on a Ubuntu or Debian machine, all other aspects of the target machine are undefined because you don't know about them, because you don't manage them. So in that case, you deploy to a Debian machine. These two commands will be called. OpenSSL will get installed, and a user will get added, but nothing more. So there could be other users on there. There could be other packages on there that you don't know about. And you don't specify it. And then it could be that another package or another service that you are running on there depends on another package that is not defined. And it works on one machine, but doesn't work on another machine. Because you haven't defined all the state you need. So traditional config management converges to a target state. So the typical Puppet pattern is, if Puppet fails, run it again, and again, and again. And after the third run, it has the state. It converges to a target state. It is eventually consistent. Sorry, it's just, I have 5 years of Puppet experience. And after 5 years of Puppet, I thought, I need something else. Sorry? I'm still recovering from this state. And so what purely configuration management is all about, it's about rebuilding the complete target state. So if you define a state in a purely functional configuration management system, you build a new state where all your state is defined. So you have a defined consistency for all aspects of your operating system. That's what you want to have. And if you think back to this graphic, it's just the same all over again. The same problems we have in package management, we also have in configuration management, because all configuration can be abstracted as a package. Configuration also has dependencies. Configuration has a build process. Configuration has inputs. That, for example, for templating of your configuration file, you have to get in there somehow. So what we have to do is eliminate the state, because everything is a freaking state problem. So what about we just take Nix and build like the Linux kernel, an initial RAM disk, a bootloader, an init system, some configuration files, lots of packages, and we get a complete operating system, and that is NixOS. So in NixOS, the first thing you do is write a configuration. And this configuration could look like something like this. For example, you define that your bootloader is grub, and grub has to be installed on devsta. You have a root file system that is on devsta1. Your host name of the system is web server. You have a firewall where the allowed ports, so the port 80 and port 443 are open. We have some packages in your environment like HTOP or Vim. And you have services. These are abstractions over configuration and services, like services as in your init system that will be started and will be configured accordingly. So for example, we enable the OpenSSH service because we want remote access to the machine, and we enable like the Nginx service and define that we want a virtual host that's called service.example.com. We also define that we force SSL usage, like this auto generates an Nginx config that has a redirect from plain text to HTTPS, adds an HSTS header, for example. And also with enable ECMI, you say, oh, when I do HTTPS, I want to have a Let's Encrypt certificate, no problem. Everything will be generated and fetched from Let's Encrypt automatically. So this fetches a Let's Encrypt certificate, does the authorization, authentication, and installs it on your system. And then the specific configuration of this virtual host, you have a proxy pass to a backend where some application you are running is available. That will be available under this vhost over HTTPS. It could look like this. So originally, I had a live demo where I installed NixOS, but I'll skip it for now. If you have time in the end, I can do it. So what are the unique features of NixOS? You have, because NixOS is in the backend, just using Nix, you have all the basic features of Nix, the package manager, available in your distribution. You have reliable upgrades that are pinned to specific Git commits of your configuration and the Nix PKGs repo. This state is immutable and it is always reproducible, because everything is available there. So everything like the kernel version, what kernel modules are available, what firmware is has to be available to, for loading, the config files like /etc/fstab or the OpenSSH config is all available as a package in the Nix store. You have atomic upgrades. The cool thing is the switch process from one NixOS configuration to another is just one symlink. It's one symlink that will get modified, and your system is a new system, a new version of the system. So the upgrade is truly atomic. With that, of course, you have the old versions also available, so you can just do a rollback. That's also atomic. Also, you have the Nix feature, multi-user package management, of course, and you can take the same configuration and deploy that configuration on multiple targets. For example, a QEMU for IAM, or a VirtualBox, or an AMI on Amazon, or a Google Cloud Engine. You build an ISO image on a bootable USB stick, or a NetBoot image, or container tarballs for LXC, or Docker images. Nix just doesn't care. The basic building blocks are available in Nix PKG's repo, and it takes care of everything that is needed to build those target environments. But that, of course, is just a small subset of what is available. Yes?
So if I understand correctly, with the NixOS system, it's made easy to also put some files in a Git repository, and after installation, you can just pull those files and it will install your entire OS to the state it was before.
Yes. So if the question was, if you have your configuration in a Git repository and you use that to build your system, you will get the same system every time you build it. That's correct. So this is the thing you want to have in DevOps, infrastructure as code. And this time, truly, the complete infrastructure, all aspects of the state of your infrastructure as code. Yes? Yes. Yes. Before the new version of the configuration is applied, services that will be changed will be stopped, and after the switch to a new system, that will be restarted. So, for example, if I didn't change the OpenSSH service, it won't get restarted. But if I did change a specific configuration in the OpenSSHD, like for example, I change that you can log in with password as root, then OpenSSH will be restarted, of course. also if the version of OpenSSH changes. Yes. Yes, NixOS has the concept of state versions. So, what about state of applications, like for example, databases? What about those states because they can't easily be rolled back? So the answer to that is Nix doesn't care about application state. It just cares about the package and configuration state. So for example, you have the problem with Postgres, because Postgres changes its binary format with every version. So you have to manually run PG upgrade. Nix doesn't handle this. But NixOS has the concept of a state version. So if you are on a stable release, you have a state version of the stable release, and Postgres won't be upgraded by itself if you are still on the old state version. So if you're still running on Postgres 9.4, and in the new version you have 9.5, it won't be upgraded automatically. It's a manual step you have to take with other orchestration tools. But Nix has a solution for that later. But it's not in the base system. OK? And the last thing. There are about 500 service modules. That means about 500 services are available for you to just service.name.enable gleich true. These are stuff like Elasticsearch, HA proxy, Greylock, UDIP package. A lot of packages that you will need for your infrastructure are already available as services you can easily install and configure. 10 minutes. So, and the other cool thing is there's a testing framework available. You can test every service that you use. There's also something, if you have an X server running and you want to do test on the X server, there's also a tool that does OCR on the VNC output of QEMU, and you can do a lot of crazy stuff with it. So the how is NixOS organized? There's one stable release every half a year. The next one will be 16.9. The code is also in the NixPKG's repo. There's a stable branch that's based on the latest release, and the Git master, which is basically a rolling release, like Arch. It has a small but growing community. There are about 900 contributors and 90,000 commits. We have around 13,000 pull requests and 4,000 issues on this repo. So now the cool stuff. There's also a deployment tool available. It's called NixOps. You can specify what configuration you want. Like, for example, we have our OpenSSH that we want and an Nginx and an authorized key for root. And we have another file where we define where to deploy it. In this case, I chose VirtualBox. And if I create a deployment in NixOps, I can deploy it. And it will be deployed locally on my local VirtualBox instance. But the target environment can also be AWS, Google Cloud Engine, a random SSH host that runs NixOS that you just put in the IP address. It can also be stuff like Hetzner. There's a NixOp Hetzner module that automatically restarts Hetzner root servers and in the rescue system installs NixOS on it and provisions your config on it automatically. And cool stuff like that. We also have a build platform. It's called Hydra. It knows about Nix. It knows how to build Nix package. It knows about deduplication. And it will basically just work. And you can also do like, you can substitute Jenkins with it. So seriously, why Nix? Nix protects me against me. Nix exposes the things I forget. Nix lets me do things multiple times consistently. And Nix, the one language to rule them all. So what are the problems? It has a steep learning curve. It is a little bit difficult to get in because it's basically functional programming. And most people are not accustomed to functional programming. Quick hacks are impossible. Like, for example, you can't modify etc hosts. You can't modify etc resolve conf. These are links to the Nix store that are read-only. They are mounted read-only. You can't modify it. Documentation is unfortunately not very beginner-friendly. You can have multiple versions of different packages in your system, so you pay the flexibility with disk space. There's no management of application state, but you can do it with NixOps. Also, some stuff is not nice right now. Like, for example, private files are always readable in the NixStore. The NixStore is by definition world readable. That's not very nice. Services could be hardened a little bit more. It would be cool if Nix would be statically typed. Some speed and memory improvements could be taken. Also, there's still work ongoing on binary determinism, but other distributions like Debian have the same problem. But Nix tries very hard, and we would like to have PDP distribution of the binary packages because we can guarantee that these are the same. We are looking at things like IPFS for that. Useful resources, where to find documentation. And should you use Nix in production, I say we do, other companies do, and even some of our customers do. So thanks, that was the talk. So 4 minutes for questions, I think. Is that correct? Yes, please.
Don't you think this will turn out in a nightmare that we handle all the old packages and so on in a few years?
No. So the question is, won't it turn into a nightmare to handle all the old packages? No, because Nix has garbage collection. That means all packages that are not linked from other packages will be garbage collected and removed if they are not needed anymore.
This is if you install packages, but if you already have a package, if you want to install a game, for example, which is 4 years old, and it has all the requirements already linked, and someone decided to clean up their RAM space and delete it, maybe, or change the download link.
So what about, the question was, what about packages that are linked against old versions? So this doesn't happen in Nix because you always build from source, basically. You always build with the current dependencies, the current versions, library versions, that this software will still run on. Of course, we package also binary programs, like, for example, Oracle Java, or like some games that are available. They will get patched to use the current versions, or old versions will be pinned accordingly. So only the versions you need will be linked, basically, or will be installed. But by default, you always get the current version that is available in Nix packages, and old versions will be removed. Yes? So the question is there some like benchmarks how long NixOS deploy takes compared or application of configuration takes in comparison to Puppet? There aren't, but as a heavy Puppet user, I can say Ruby sucks. And if you have catalog times of about 2 minutes, the equivalent Nix code will be evaluated in seconds. But it will take about 1 gig of memory. Sorry. that is RAM, sorry. Yeah.
It sounds to me like Nix can be used instead of Docker and not
Docker. It can. So the question is, can Nix be used instead of Docker? The answer is yes, it can. But you can also use Nix to build Docker images. So if you have a Docker infrastructure, like, for example, Kubernetes or something, where you do the scaling with Kubernetes or some Docker add-on, and you are bound to that, or you want to use it because you know it, that's no problem. You can just build Docker images based on Nix configurations, and you get the same nice properties. You get the reproducibility, like, for example. If you do in a standard Docker file, you have the standard thing you derive from a distribution like Ubuntu, and the first thing in every Docker file, there's a run apt-get update and apt-get upgrade. And then you're fucked, because you don't know what version of the packages you will have in your image. In Nix, you know, you can pin it to a Git commit, like you do with a software. They go very well together, I'd say. But I think Docker is a bit hyped, because the problem with Docker is that so if you use it like a standard development environment as a developer, basically, you are not used to system administration. You don't have things like you aren't aware of like security updates and stuff. You are a developer and just building your container. You just don't care where it will run, if it is secure or something. So you need to have some kind of guarantee in there, in the whole process, and some kind of operations knowledge that developers don't have. And Docker is geared to developers. And that's the problem. But it's no problem for operations people, because operations people also know how to run Docker properly. Sorry? Which?
Apt.
Yeah.
Also has a feature to pin version numbers, right?
Apt also has the feature to pin version numbers, that's correct. But there's an explicit thing you have to do for each package.
Yeah.
With Nix, you have it for all packages by default, the pinning.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Time out. Yeah.
Just a quick one.
Sorry. You can get to me afterwards. Yeah.
You're deploying Nginx and you're rolling out a new config. Does that mean the old Nginx package has to be rebuilt from source every time I'm rolling a new config?
No, the config is independent from the service. So basically, the config depends on Nginx, but Nginx doesn't depend on the config.
All right.
So, of course, the Nginx won't get rebuilt. Yes?
I got the impression that
So the question is it also geared towards desktop? Yes, it is. Actually, the first thing I did with NixOS is installing it on my laptop. It has packages like KDE, GNOME, if you like it. I have i3 on there. You can configure your X server, like the monitor resolution and all aspects of your X server, just like you configure your Nginx, basically. Okay, so thank you.